when a challenge comes before a family, so they have to view it as just that. A challenge came before the family. And the family is an entity. The challenge can present itself in many different forms. And the fact that one of the spouses might be to blame fully, partially, or just in the other spouse's mind, doesn't mean that now the challenge is that spouse's challenge. The challenge is our challenge. There was a non-Jewish couple who were dating, and they were about to get engaged. Non-Jewish, out in the Midwest. Totally, nothing close to Jews. They saw Jews maybe once in their life. But it's a true story. I heard it from the Jew who they happened to see once in their life. He worked with one of the people involved, and they're about to get engaged, and the father of the girl calls the guy in, and he tells him, look, you want to marry my daughter. You have an alcohol problem. Before you guys go to engagement, I'm going to pay. Start seeing a counselor. Get counseling. Happened to be in the state of Wisconsin, where a tremendous percentage of the population have a drinking problem. So maybe the father thought she can't get anything better. But I think what the father told the guy was true. He said to him, you're a great guy. You are a great guy, and you're going to make a great husband and a great father. But you have to get over this drinking problem. So I'm giving you the money. Start going to see a counselor and get over the problem, and then you two will get engaged. I don't know if I would tell him to do that. But we're dealing with the question of what happens when we discover an issue after we're married. We're not dealing with the question of what we would recommend the person who's offered to date a girl that has an issue or a girl that's offered to date a guy that has an issue. That's not our topic tonight. We're dealing with a couple that discovers, one of the spouses discover, that there is an issue here. So just as we mentioned before, that there is a tendency to attribute problems to one of the spouses, each spouse might have the tendency to attribute it to the other one, so too some people have a tendency to think that there is a problem. The first year, we said, has many new responsibilities for the wife, and it's very common that even a girl that never cried before is going to spend much of the first 2 years of marriage crying. It's very easy for the husband to say, honey, I think you're depressed. I really think you should get help. He might be right, but there's a good possibility he's wrong. She might not say anything, but she might be thinking, sure, I'm depressed. When was the last time you took out the garbage? When was the last time you did the shopping? When was the last time you did the dishes? I'm working from morning till night, and of course, what do? You walk home and expect to have your meals ready. I wouldn't be quick to think that a person needs help, but quick is a relative term. When a couple lived together, there was a kid I knew whose parents met at a mental hospital. There were both patients there. He and she, that's where they met. And they got married. Met a lot of kids. Met a lot of issues. But over there, you'd walk into the house and the issues were staring at you in the face. Sometimes a person should recognize that there's an issue. And if he waits 3 years, that's called being way too slow. But very often, giving something time is not a problem. What's important is the attitude. What's critical is that the attitude is not, you have a problem. The attitude is, we have an issue. We're going to have to deal with something. And that's the difference of night and day. And it's not just a question of wording. It's known that when couples have difficult situations, they have a child with a challenge, they have a medical issue to deal with themselves, they have financial issues. It's known that this is a great cause for friction between them. But it's also known that it can be a catalyst for strengthening their relationship far beyond what they could have had if not for this situation. Rav Elisha Vishlitsky once said that when a person has a difficult situation, and he said this to a parent who came to him when his wife was diagnosed. She was pregnant, and they told them that the child wouldn't live. So he told that parent, he said, you could look at it as tagar, that God is coming down on you, or you could look at it as etgar, as a challenge. You have something to live up to. And it's very important that when there are these situations, couple recognize that this can be the source of the strength of our marriage. As difficult as a situation can be, when one stands by the other and makes it our issue, then that hitmodedut, the fact that they put up with that situation and they overcame it, can be a tremendous source of strength to the couple. Now again, we're not talking about when you're dating. When I was dating...
I'm sorry, what did you say that Hebrew word was? Hitmodedut?
Hitmodedut. The hitmoded is to put up with something. To tackle something. When I was dating, I heard all kinds of, in my opinion, stupid lines. I was dating a girl, and someone said to me, she was the only girl on the planet. If she was Eve and you were Adam, wouldn't you marry her? So why shouldn't you marry her? So I said, look, it's true. Adam, it says, went through every animal on the planet and recognized that after every animal, I said, this is the one, he came to Eve.
That's the
animal. I said, if I compared to every animal, it's true, I would marry her. I thought it was a ridiculous claim. Well, you tell me I'm supposed to marry a girl on the thought that if we were stuck in the world, there was no one else around, would I marry her? That's the way you decide who you're going to marry? We're not discussing whether a person should marry into a situation. We're discussing after marriage. When suddenly we recognize that there is a situation. Before marriage, speak to someone who has a lot of experience. Not me. I don't know how to answer these questions. I people pose them to me all the time, and I don't know how to answer them. It's a very, very tough question. Obviously, if a person is considering a girl, then she has a lot of attributes. Obviously, if he's asking the question, then there's a reason to ask the question. And the difficulty with all these things are that before marriage, you don't begin to know how the issue is going to affect you. So I don't know what to advise people on these things. Ask someone else. But after marriage, which is what we're dealing with, so then the first step is that it has to be our issue. And there was a husband who came to me and kept telling me, my wife has to see a shrink. So I told him, why don't you go to family counseling? Don't tell her she has a problem. Tell her, look, you see things aren't going the way they should between us. So let's get some help. Let us get some help. When it is us who need help, then we can go and get help, and it works. But if it's you who needs the shrink, yeah, I'll go with you. Sure, I'll go with you, honey. I'll take you to the shrink. Yeah, then it's very difficult. English slang, a shrink is a psychiatrist. No, yeah.
Isn't that actually what you said? Maybe it's not a good way to look at it before you when you think about whether to make a long term, to marry someone. But after you marry them, then she is the only one in the world.
Oh, fine. Okay. After you marry them, then she's not only the only one. She's the only one in comparison to all the people, not only in comparison to all the animals. But beforehand, I don't see that as an approach.
To anyone, person, place, or thing.
Fine. We were talking about that. I don't think that a person can approach a date that way. A person can't approach when he's offered a date. Well, I'm not getting any other offers, so she has this issue, so okay, well, if she were Eve, wouldn't I marry her? That's not an approach. When you're offered a girl, you have to think about pros and cons and whether it makes sense to continue with this girl. Yeah, or to go out with her to begin with.
I have a question. This is I should probably write it down just for another time. How do we know
They have 9 or 12 hours of classes on dating. They get them. You want to talk them to you. A lot of guys have them. That's why we did that marathon, so we wouldn't go through it every time, because guys have the same questions every time. So the last class probably deals with that. Last or second class, so you don't have to hear all 12 hours. If you have questions after that, so then we could for sure talk. But there's like 2 hours worth on that, I think.
It's
there, yeah. There are issues that people have to know cannot wait. If a person sees that a spouse, God forbid, is suicidal, don't wait. If a person sees that a spouse has a gambling problem, don't wait. And don't think you can fix it at home. Rabbi Twersky, in his class on gambling, quotes the story about a woman who saw that her husband had a gambling problem. So she wanted to fix it at home. So she took all the assets and put them in her name. She took all the bank accounts and put them in her name. And she ensured that he could not take out loans and could not take out the money they had or mortgage their home or anything else for his gambling problem. Seems like she got it down pat. Turns out that he went and paid a girl $100 to take her ID and go to the bank, and they found themselves without a house, without money. It was a very, very sad story. There are issues that a person has to know have to be dealt with right away. And what they are, so different people will expand them to include different things, but certain things you know common sense-wise, and if you're not sure, consult with someone. Now, I'm not sure if I want this recorded or not, but we'll say it, and we'll bear the wrath. We're doing this just for the sake of the listeners, but after not so many years of experience, but putting together my experience with other people's experience, you have to be very careful when choosing a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Firstly, the experience of quite a few people I know, myself included, is that 3 out of 4 don't do a good job with this specific patient. Whether they do a good job with other patients, I have no way of knowing. But it's a shidduch to find the right psychologist or psychiatrist. And the problem with psychologist or psychiatrist is that it's not the type of thing that you can get an easy referral for. I don't tell anyone about who my psychologist is, so no one knows. You don't tell me who your psychologist is, so how do we get recommendations? So part of my job, and any rabbi's job, is to know psychologists. That's why whenever I hear about a guy who goes to a psychologist who feels free enough to tell me about it, I beg him, I say, do me a favor. Give me the stats. Tell me how he was. Tell me the pluses, the minuses. I have files. When I was in the United States, I had files on psychologists. And now in Israel, I'm starting to get files on psychologists with recommendations and what people said about them. Rabbis should have recommendations, and they're one place you could turn to. There are organizations you could turn to. I just want to recap what we said until now. We said that every difficulty can be blamed on someone. In a marriage, that's not the way things should work. Ideally, they shouldn't be blamed. And couples have to view any challenge as a mutual challenge, something they'll put up with together. We said that it's very easy to think that there is a need for external help, and that very often, almost always, there is not a need for external help, but rather the couple have to work it out themselves. We said that sometimes there are extreme circumstances in which one should not wait and one has to get external help, but we said usually it is not extreme circumstances, in which case one can take the time and see a little bit where things are headed, and one can take the time to at least consult as to whether external help is necessary or not. Even if there is a need for external help, it is pertinent to still view it as our challenge. and to be alongside the spouse in putting up with the challenge. If there's a time when someone needs your love the most, it's at this time. There's a saying that they sell for t-shirts for teachers. A child needs your love the most when he deserves it the least. So we could apply that to a spouse also. That even if the spouse doesn't deserve it right now, maybe that's when they need it most. One of the mistakes that's very easy to make is to be anxious and to be nervous and to be pressured. No situation gains from that. And what us men know how to do best is that. Honey, you didn't take your medication yet today. We feel like let's take things head on. So if the spouse needs more structure in their life, so we'll try to give that structure. It doesn't work that way. We have to remember that when we get married, we don't want the mashgiach. We don't want someone looking over our shoulder telling us if we're religious or not. And believe it or not, neither does our spouse. We quoted last week in Mars that say that. A wife doesn't want someone looking over her shoulder. She wants a companion. She wants someone she could lean on, but not someone who's looking over her shoulder. Not religiously, nor health-wise. Now, does that mean that we shouldn't help? We should help where we could. But we should ask how we could help. And we should take an active role. When a wife goes to a gynecologist, very often she's going to want the husband to come and sit outside and then hear together what the doctor said. Same thing with an ultrasound. So a person can take an active role, and a person should take an active role, but a person should ask where his help is needed. One of the things that us husbands do a lot is to think that we know what the other side needs. And then we are time and again disappointed when we discover that we got it wrong. And we don't understand why we don't get appreciation, but rather the woman says, if you took 3 hours off from work, then why didn't you tell me? You could have helped me with X, Y, Z. And the husband says, but I surprised you. I came here. I wanted to help you. Okay, we have to get used to the fact that we don't know exactly where we could be helpful, and we should ask and find out where we could be helpful. The question specifically was raised when a spouse has undergone certain traumatic experiences in their youth. Now, here we have to really divide things a little bit. Every person has gone through traumatic experiences in their youth. For one kid, it was a car accident. For another kid, it was when he fell off his bike. And for a third kid, it was when his best friends betrayed him. But there are levels in the traumas. The question was asked specifically when a child has experienced incest. And what we have to know is that the psychological impact of things of this nature are so strong. A doctor once told me, after he spent part of his internship dealing with children who went through this, he said, if I could get any potential child molester to see the damage of how he ruined these people's lives 20 years down the road, I'm convinced that 80%, 90% wouldn't do what they're doing. The damage is very deep, and to deal with it, so one should consult with other people. Sometimes the issues are dealt with before the marriage, and the person can go on normally. I know of cases that I was involved with, that they're married, and the wife doesn't need to see a psychologist anymore, and they're happily married, and she got over it. I know of more than one such case. Unfortunately, these are issues that rabbis have to deal with a lot. I'm not saying a lot, but every rabbi has to deal with it. Any rabbi that's dealing with people. Now, that doesn't mean that any rabbi is qualified to deal with it. And I would be very careful with who I would consult and what I would consult. I can tell you from myself, it's rare that I do anything other than try to help the people find a good psychologist. There are things that are beyond a person's league, and a person has to recognize that. A person might not know that, he might not have enough experience to know that, but these are issues that a person needs help with, and the help is available. And people can build lives afterwards. They're not doomed, but they do need to get help and work it out. Yeah? Right.
So you seek outside help, but you can't. You said like something like, okay, wife has her problems, it's not always your problem, and you have to try not to make your wife sad also. But with these kind of cases, it's very hard not to make yourself because the sensitivity is within the whole sexual issue or even the words you say.
So that's where a couple has to consult both with a psychologist and preferably a frum psychologist and the rav. In these scenarios, there are specific halachic rulings as to how even the dating process should go about because of these sensitivities. And each case is individualistic, and ideally there should be a rav and a psychologist who are accompanying the couple as they go. Now, just a word I left out on psychologists, you have to be very careful, even from psychologists who you would think are from. There's a girl I know who couldn't have children, and at one point she was told, why don't you go see a psychologist? So she went to a psychologist she was told was from, and the psychologist told her, you have to let out your anger a little bit. So you're angry at Hashem, so stop covering your hair, stop eating kosher, let out your anger and you'll feel better, and then you'll be a better Jew. So just because you're told someone is a psychologist, and just because you're told someone is from, you have to do a good job verifying. This psychologist ruined that person's life for a long time. I'm not sure if that person ever got out of the damage that psychologist did to her. And I'm not only talking about religiously. So psychologist or psychiatrist, it's a double-edged sword. You got to get it right. You got to be prepared to admit that the one that was chosen is not right. And hopefully you get enough recommendations that you find the right one fast. But there are religious psychologists and there are good psychologists. And again, we spent the introduction to the class, which isn't recorded, discussing how don't jump to assume that there's something wrong. Could be there's a problem that has to be dealt with as a couple, but doesn't need external intervention. I very often tell couples, I'd rather not hear from you. For your sake. Try to see if you could work it out without coming to me. I always tell Hassanim a story here and there about couples that come after marriage. And I tell him that it's very common that couples come after marriage, but at the same time I tell him that's to his advantage. If they could work it out without coming, so do. That's the healthier relationship. It's a pity if it's necessary to bring someone else in. But there are those things which you can't think to solve on your own. And you do need external help.
Yeah, I think it's always good in
cases to check, double check. Right? That's what I said. It's always important to check. You never lose by checking. Yeah, you also don't want the relationship to be revolving around help. Meaning the relationship, a healthy relationship, is a relationship of equals, so to speak. Sure, there are things I help her, there are things she helps me, but it's not focused on her problem. That's not the connecting point. That's one of the things that people have to be careful when they're dating. Sometimes men have a tendency to be attracted to a certain element of sadness that a girl has. Because, so to speak, they'll be her appeaser. That's natural, but it's unhealthy.
Is there any differences the man who was abused?
There are going to be differences in what the solution is, but I think either way they should get consultation, for sure. The differences are only going to be technical, what the advice that they're going to get is. But at the end of the day, it's something that has to be overcome, and maybe there are rabbis who know how to help a person. I don't know. I would try to find the rabbi who could go with the person, with the psychologist, to work hand in hand. So a person has both. But I definitely think that one should get professional help.
If you are dating and you see that she needs professional help, is it a direct reason to stop that?
I don't know the answer to those questions. Every situation has 1,000 factors.
Well, I'm talking about severe problems, which you don't see from the start.
If you're asking the question, then I assume you have severe reasons to continue going with it. If you didn't have severe reasons, then the answer is obvious.
Okay.
So if I don't know the severe reasons, so how could I answer? No, doesn't that make sense?
Right, it does.
Otherwise, it's obvious. It's very easy to say no. It's what I told someone this week. I said, it's very easy and very tempting for me to tell you, no, don't go with this girl. Why should you do this to yourself? I don't sleep at night when I don't give that answer. Because I know the dangers a little bit of what's involved with not giving that answer. But that I still cannot take the responsibility to give that answer. Other people will. Talk to other people. Other people have more experience and different experience. See what other people say. I don't know the answer to the question. I can tell you that a person never knows what chips are included in a deck. You don't know when you're marrying a regular girl. Certainly when there are issues.
Is there any responsibility, or is it too difficult to try to help her if you don't want to get together with her?
So that's complicated. I'm a big believer in getting people involved in a system. Meaning, when people see a situation that needs help, so the first tendency is, how can I help? I think the first tendency should be, how can I get them into a system that will help them? The government has set up system. The medical system, the medical world has a system. Sometimes you could be the impetus to help someone out. There are times where you see no one else is doing anything, so you can get the ball rolling. But you have to think that your life is going to go on, and usually the situations that require help require attention for more than a day, more than a week, and more than a year. And you're not going to be able to give them that help. So if you're going to take the time, and it's noble, and sometimes it's the right thing to take the time, then the way to take the time, I think, is to get them into the system. Get a social worker involved in the case, get their parents involved in the case, etc. That's I think, the true help to the person. And then it also frees you. It might mean that you'll have a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks where you'll have to take a lot of time to help, but you have to think long term. In long term, you're not going to be able to give your life to this person. And it could be that in the beginning you feel like, no, I could help, and it's just getting over this hill or that hill. Usually it's not that way. Usually there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and the best thing for the person and the most true help for the person is getting them into the system. With all the system's limitations. But you can't be the person's parent. There's a limit to what you can do. Become a rabbi and people will expect you to be their parent. You guys think I'm joking. Even then, you can't be a person's parent. You can't. People have to live their own lives, make their own mistakes, and you help with what you can. I hope it doesn't sound too cruel. It's just realistic. I think it's the true help. You'll truthfully help the person if you help them get into the system. Okay, anything else? Yeah.
I mean, the terminology, signs of the prophets.
The what?
The terminology, signs of the prophets.
That's because our sages said that a person's disciple is like his son.
A person loves.
Why are the students of the prophets called the sons of the prophets? So our sages derived and they applied to last week's parsha where we read about Velimatim Tam Benechem, you should teach your sons Torah. So our sages say that includes the students. The students are called one's sons because one loves his students like his sons. Our sages say that one is jealous of any person but his student. A student, one always wants to go further. A student and one's son. One always wants his student or his son to advance beyond himself. A healthy parent or a healthy teacher. Anything else? I know we didn't go into a lot of details. I can't go into a lot of details. But I think we opened the subject and gave a little bit of a direction to think. And again, remember the introduction. Oh, the introduction isn't even recorded. Okay. Then we read.